Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DOC, the Diggy Diggy motherfucking God.
Yo, what's up? This is your boy, Z-Man.
What up, dog? This is Keisha.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
It's your boy, DJ Paul KOL from 36 Block.
Young Busy Bone.
Vice World.
It's your man, Mastermind the Hellraiser.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Red.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross, and you're listening to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
Now, real niggas do real things, and I hang with the real. So if you fuck with my family, you fuck with me. Hey, UGS for life.
For all them fuck boys disrespecting the team. Yeah. Snippers from the show and they saluting the name.
Come
underground
on.
Society, real talk on the scene. Y'all gon' fuck around, be left white chalked on the scene. UGS for life, and you busters that don't know them. Down with Prison Mac J, the Murder Master Music Show. Archives of legends with questions you wanna know. It's why them whole shows be slick listening on the low. Using episodes for they shows with no recognition. More than suspicion when you can hear Prez's voice if you listen. Disrespect, I'm ripping. Bitch, I'm flipping. Kill their credentials whenever they name get mentioned.
Oh.
Pittsburgh Patrick, they gon' teach them some manners. Grab the ball bat and show up at their door in bandanas. For screaming real hip hop and supporting them swag. Show up at their club for breakfast, y'all are back. Take aim at a lane, put his career in the casket. I come to kill a Mac J, make him pay for their actions. They can't pay him, smashing in an orderly fashion. With no permission, I'm asking.
Smash it and attack it.
Turning taxing for every question that's got me asking. You can steal from the real, but yet you still can't outlast him. UGS for life, that's steel to plastic. Got that iron in my blood, burn your soul like acid.
You know? You better ask, nigga. UGS for life. Where the real at? Punk ass niggas. www.ugsforlife.com. Where the real is at?
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is episode 392. Murder Master Music Show. We're actually we're having a return guest tonight. I'm gonna bring him on here in a minute. We're gonna bring on director R.J. Bond. He's most recently directed Tupac Assassination 3: Battle for Compton. We had him on the show a few weeks back, and since then there's been a shitstorm of media going on. Sharifa Knight responded to his press release. All kinds of stuff's going on, but we're going to let him talk about that. Let's bring on the homie. I see the homie Pittsburgh Patrick, UGS for Life, co-host over here. He's on the line. What's up, Pittsburgh Pat? How you doing?
Oh, what up, Prez? I'm good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I'm looking forward to this interview because, you know, we just had RJ on a couple weeks ago, and that was a real in-depth interview. About the film Tupac Assassination 3: Battle for Compton, which, if you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend it. We covered a lot of different topics. The film raised a lot of questions, and I'll tell you what, it's made a lot of media attention since we've had him on. Not from us. I mean, he sent out his press releases, everything went crazy. We're going to talk about that right now. I'm going to bring on Mr. R.J. Bond. What's up, R.J.? How you doing, man?
Hey, dudes. What's happening, man? What's happening?
Yo, what up, R.J.?
Man? What up, brother?
Glad to have you back, bro.
Thanks, man.
Are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here. Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, there you go. I hear you now. I'll tell you what, a lot of stuff has happened since you guys released your press release of the film. Media has been going crazy, man. Can you talk a little bit about the, all the noise that's been going on over the Tupac Assassination 3: Battle for Compton?
But yeah, well, we couldn't believe it. You issue a lot of press releases when you do movies. I mean, I've been doing this 10 years. You issue press releases, and sometimes you get some attention, and the best you hope for is you get a couple of interviews out of it. You know, you get some people to pay attention and get some coverage, and, you know, sometimes they go well, you get a couple of nods, and sometimes you issue a press release, and the rest of the world is like, did you even send it? You know, just,
yeah.
you just get nothing on it. So, I was to say that we were kind of unprepared. We, in a way, we knew what we were doing when we put it out, but by the same token, no one expects it to go viral. I mean, last week it was the number two trending story on the internet. If you could imagine that. I mean, my distributor was calling up. I think they were popping up the Cognac Crevassier and having a good time at their distribution place out there, because they said that they were getting calls from distributors, other distributors like, you know, Netflix and places like that, saying, you know, where can we grip this movie? And you know, so they were very happy too. But we just weren't prepared. I think the press release itself, and it wasn't the press release, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but it wasn't so much the press release, it was kind of what happened when they took the story, took the press release and ran with it, that started the real stir. And over like 6 or 7 days, it was weird because the story then became the story. It was a story about the story. It was real meta, where it was a story about a story. And so, you know, but the further that it went, the further it got more untethered, so to speak. And, you know, we called it the worst telephone game ever in terms of, you know, what it ended up in. And I watched it evolve. And, you know, you try to do what you can, but, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. But, yeah,
damage
oh, my
control,
God.
Control, so to speak.
Yeah. You know what? Well, it was really segregation. Yeah, it was. But, man, we talk about busy. Last week, my phone probably aged a year on blowing up.
Yeah. So basically, would it be fair to say that the media got some things wrong?
Oh yeah. It started when we issued the press release. I mean, we're, you know, again, we don't just, a lot of people issue these things out on the free press release website, you know, or anybody can go and just put a press release up in that. We have a publicist, though. We have one that she's been amazing. I mean, she did publicity for Straight Outta Compton. She's working publicity for the Grammys. I mean, Edna Sims and ESP Public Relations have done some, you know, Ford is one of her clients. I mean, she knows what she's doing. She knows her shit.
For many years. Wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Shout out to Edna.
And yeah, thanks, Edna. Power to Edna. Edna knows her shit. And so when a press release goes out, you better be sure she's read it from a publicist standpoint. She's already looked at it to make sure there's nothing so outrageous that it's going to create, you know, controversy from the minute it drops. You know, you can say strong things and make big claims, but you don't want to light fires right away that are going to, you know, cause problems out the gate. So, you know, and that's something that most people don't, I guess, understand in the process, is that there is somebody in the middle who is looking at this for you to say, is this going to give you, you know, pain later? Is this going to give you agita later? And of course it did. Now, when I was talking about doing the press release and you get, you hope that some people reach out to you and contact you about it, we did have that happen. And we had a couple of newspapers that reached out to me. Michael's in China. He won't be back for a couple of days. He's in China right now. We got a book deal on our book, Tupac 187. We got a book deal in China on it, and he's working on that right now. So we're very pleased about that. Yeah, it's big. But when I got called by the reporter, they were very excited about it, and they understood that the press release was talking about something that happened a couple years ago, but ultimately it was still relevant. But he went with it, and he wrote the article. And then somebody else wrote an article, because I think – the way it goes, and again, I'm not positive because I'm not on that side of the world, but what happens is they put these stories on what's called a wire, like Associated Press. So the story's kind of out there for any other newspaper to take, and then what they do is they take it and then they add their own flavor to it, so to speak. So, you know, they serve it up kind of vanilla. Here's the facts. Here's what was said and this, that, and the other. And then other places will do that. And then that's when we started to really see this thing go haywire. When, for example, in our press release, we had said that Russ Poole had a signed affidavit that Russ Poole had filled out. It wasn't Thaddeus Culpepper, the attorney's affidavit, and that became a big problem because we never said that Thaddeus Culpepper signed an affidavit. We said Thaddeus Culpepper told Russ Poole that information, and Russ Poole signed an affidavit before he died, alleging what he had been told by Culpepper. And we've learned since, of course, that Culpepper has told a whole lot of other people the same thing. So, so Russ wasn't making any of this up. But that's a big difference when you pin it on that. But I started to watch as the, newspaper articles would come through and people would call me and stuff like that. I'd watch that they had started to evolve into it was the lawyer's affidavit. And, and there's only so much control that we have over it. I mean, I posted on the Facebook page right away, hey, listen, correction here. If anybody's watching, we're not saying this. We're saying this is what we said. If it's been twisted, there's not much we can do about that. So, and then all of a sudden it was like a tsunami, man. It got so big that there was just no getting ahead of it. There's nothing anybody could do to get ahead of that story. And it just went nuts.
That's crazy how they ran with it like that.
Oh yeah. The thing about it is, at the end of the day, we still believe it's absolutely true. There was no reason for Thaddeus Culpepper to lie to Russ Poole, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the thing about it is that when we got to this point, the second big trigger that happened, and I know you want to talk about this, was the whole Sharitha and Reggie Wright thing. And we saw that there was some information that came out about that. Now, I will tell you that in Russ Poole's affidavit, he does state that he was told by Thaddeus Culpepper that Suge believed that Sharitha and Reggie had been after him for years. So, I mean, that was in Russ Poole's affidavit. But that was never part of our press release. It was never something that we put out there like that. And one very clever newspaper in it was a foreign country. I don't know which one. But, I mean, we got picked up by the freaking Nigerian press. So, after that, who knows where it goes. But, we got a very enterprising report came in, and they tied the story into an earlier interview that Russ Poole did with Vice. Not Vibe, but Vice magazine, and back in like 2013 or 2014, and Russ had said that he had believed for a long time that Sharitha and Reggie had something to do with putting a hit out on Suge. Now, even then, nobody said anything about Tupac. They just said that in the article that Russ Poole done that. So they kind of drug in a whole nother piece of information from a different article and merged it with the press release stuff. So then you started to see that evolve, and a bunch more places ran with that one because that was interesting. And then suddenly it became that because the movie's Tupac Assassination, it stopped becoming about the plot to kill Suge. It became the plot to kill Tupac, and then you have Sharitha and Reggie trying to kill Tupac. That was how the whole thing broke down. It was just craziness.
Yeah, well, I saw on TMZ her video where she was real. It seemed like she was real upset. What are your thoughts? Did you see the video? I'm sure you did. What are your thoughts on her reaction? Her threatening
well,
to
she
sue
did two
and
videos.
All kinds of different things.
Yeah, well, she did. Listen, first off, if I had a dime for every, I've been doing this 10 years. If I had a dime for everybody who said they were going to sue me, I'd be a rich man. Okay, I'd stop doing DVDs. Because I could just make money off all the people who said they were going to sue me and never did. She made two videos, actually. She made the one where she's sitting on the couch, and I gotta commend TMZ and Sharitha on their production quality, because they were, you really couldn't do better than a homemade selfie, really. They couldn't have just asked her to come into the studio or something, but she made two of them. One where she was sitting on a couch, and then she did another one on TMZ Live the next day where she was in her car doing this video in her car while she was sitting in her car. And she said in the video that she was sitting in the car, she said, well, if you want to talk about me trying to kill Suge, that's one thing, but don't try to accuse me of trying to kill Tupac. And I was like, wow, really? That's where you're going with this? Because at the
it
end
almost,
of the day,
yeah.
Go ahead. Because
no, I was just going to say, that right there, by her saying that, don't accuse me of killing Tupac, but accusing me of killing Suge is one thing. That almost sounds to me like, case in point. I mean,
if you guys don't have the video, if you don't have the video, I'll get you a copy of that second video. They posted TMZ posted the what I call the couch video. They posted that on their video clips, but on their they have rebroadcasts of their live shows. And if you go through there, one of the guys that got the dreadlocks is wearing the red shirt when they were doing the interview. And you know, they were talking to her, and the two guys on TMZ, they were actually talking to her live, like a live broadcast. And they were saying to her, you know, how are you responding to this? And she's like, well, I called Reggie, and he's just laughing about it. He's laughing about the whole thing. And they looked at her, and they got a real serious look on her face. They're like, oh, why are you laughing about this? This is pretty serious allegations. Why are you laughing? And they're like, well, because we've just been hearing this for 20 years, and we're just tired of hearing it. But we've been hearing it for 20 years, so it's kind of a joke to us. And the guy at TMZ is like, well, it wouldn't be a joke to me. You know, if somebody's going to threaten to, you know, sue me or say I did something like that. And then they started talking about, are you going to sue him? Are you going to sue him? Here's the deal. And she said, oh, she was considering it and da-da-da-da. The reality is, if you go back to the original press release and you look at what was said in the original press release, it's all there. I mean, it's easy to see. It's easy to read. It's there. We never said, and even in the movie, we never said that Sharitha Knight sought to kill Tupac. That we've never said that in a million years, and I think you guys have seen the movie. You know we don't say that in the movie, period. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, when you make a documentary like this, one of the things that you do, and again, like I said, because this is actually the fifth Tupac documentary I've done. I got a couple more coming out that aren't death related, thank God. But in doing these ones about the documentary, one thing we've been very cautious of in making the movies is to let people formulate their own opinion about things. You know, I don't want to be the guy that comes out and just tries to club people over the head. I'm not the guy who says, I'm the LAPD detective who solved it, and I'm here to tell you how it is. Nobody wants to paint themselves into a corner like that to begin with, because things change. But the other part of it is that you've got these guys where we try to say in our documentaries, these are people that had means, motive, and opportunity to do the crime. Whatever that crime is, these are people who had means, motive, and opportunity, and this is the means, motive, and opportunity. Now, did they do it? I wasn't there. I mean, you know, I'm not a judge, and I wasn't a witness, so I can't tell you. But if they did do it, these are the reasons why they could have done it, and that's how we put it out there. I think you would agree. When we're very careful to draw the line between putting all the information out there so you can draw your own conclusion, or you can say it's all bullshit. It doesn't matter. You know, because it doesn't matter what we think. It matters what you think as the viewer, and then, of course, more importantly, why the police aren't solving this, why the police aren't taking all of this into consideration.
At least looking at it. It's kind of like you lay it out there on the table for us to look at, and at the end of the day, it's up to us to do our own research. And it's up to us if we want to believe it or not. I commend you for saying that. A lot of filmmakers won't even say that. But back to Sharitha real quick. I didn't see the TMZ live. I saw the other one that you were talking about with her on the couch.
Yeah, the couch. The
couch video. And she was very adamant about like you said. Not having nothing to do with killing Tupac, but when she said that about Suge, you know, that right there, I mean, it raises a little question, I would think. I would think someone would be like, hey, she's not outright, you know, shying from that. Has she contacted you, her people?
No, we haven't. We haven't heard a word from them, and I wouldn't expect that we would hear anything from them, because if they go back and actually read the press release, where are they going to go with that? Okay, where are they going to go with that?
Yeah, I find it kind of premature, you know, that somebody would go straight to TMZ and, you know, threaten this and threaten that, not even get a hold of you guys. You know, and not
well,
even
more importantly,
really,
yeah.
I've seen the press release, RJ. There's nothing wrong with it. Everything is 100% right. If you look at the press release and then you watch the film, so really, she doesn't have a leg to stand on. You know.
Well, you know, before you start accusing people of things, you better identify who it is you're accusing what of. I mean, you know that,
yeah.
And it's kind of ironic because that's the pain we have to go through when we do these movies. If you're going to accuse somebody of doing something, you better have something to back it up. You better have some reason to be able to do that. You can't just say, I'm thinking about suing people, because you don't even know who the hell you're going to sue in the first place.
Yeah, because this, a lot of stuff that you guys point out, it didn't come from you. It come from somebody else. It come from a letter, a confession of this person or that person. You guys are just putting the stuff out there. I'm pretty much saying, look at it. You know, make your own determination, but this is what we've uncovered from various people, various sources. So, yeah,
right.
You're right. She would have to go on a crazy hunt to sue people, that a lot of them, which aren't even here anymore.
Right. They're over
so,
in Nigeria. They're over in India. They're over in the UK. It's like, you know, if you really want to blame people and say you're going to sue people that said you tried to kill Tupac, okay, well, I wish you the best. I mean, it ain't me, so, you know, good luck with that. You know, but then
yeah.
When she sits there and she gets on her bandwagon and she says, that's just stupid because Tupac was worth, you know, so many million dollars and he was recorded and he was worth so much. Why would I ever want to kill? He was making money for the record. It was like a cash cow. Why would I ever kill him? Well, you're right. That's kind of the whole point of the movie, isn't it? Because that, you know, Tupac was making money for the record label, and you know, something that Sharita conveniently forgets was that there was almost 200 songs already in the can the day that Tupac got shot. Okay, so don't be pretending to me like if you didn't manage that right, that you couldn't have put out 5 or 6 more albums posthumously. I mean, the estate did. If you're running Death Row Records and you have access to 200 unreleased Tupac songs, you can't make 4 or 5 albums out of those? Really? So, I mean, you know, this is how flimsy the argument is, but this is, again, because somebody jumped on TMZ, they were angry, they were emotional, and when you're angry and emotional, you say a lot of things that you probably shouldn't or don't, you know, don't want to say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know,
I mean, I give her a pass. She's got kids. I mean, you know, she says, hey, I got kids, and they've been hearing that, you know, Suge Knight, you know, killed Tupac, or your dad's a killer, and, you know, you killed Tupac, now I got to hear this, and I got kids. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. Frank Alexander had kids, too, when they were trying to blame him and scapegoat him for the things that happened that night, which were really not in his control. He had kids, too. How do you think those kids felt? You know, Michael Moore had kids. Michael Moore's security guard, he had kids, you know. He's dead now. Frank's dead. How do you think their kids feel? You know, I think a kid's going to feel a whole lot worse if their parents are dead than they are that their parents, you know, somebody's accusing them of doing something they didn't do. You know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. But, yeah, you know, you hit a wild storm, you know, media frenzy, like you said, all over the Internet. But then other people, like the Murder Rap team, they put out some video, and I hadn't had a chance to check it out myself. I'm going to let you tell me about it. We had Mike Dorsey on the show a few weeks back, right before we had you on the show. It's almost, when I look at you guys, it's almost like a, like you guys are each playing chess. Oh yeah, well you got this letter confession. Oh, I got this kid. You know what I mean? There's always like a back and forth thing. What's the deal with you guys? Is it because you guys both have opposing theories?
Yeah, I think it's almost become almost like, you know, what Clash of the Titans at this point. You know, but the funny thing about it is, you know, one thing that we have in common is that neither one of us were there. You know, I mean, when I was doing the project with Frank, Frank was there. So, you know, he had one advantage over everybody else in the fact that he knew all these people and he was there. Now you got a couple of people that, you know, are investigators, you know, one being a police, one being an investigator journalist, where they're both going out and seeking details and things like that. you know, that they feel very passionately about, or if you watch our movie, you understand why they have motive to do the things that they do. And, you know, so you've got these people, and we're trying to get down to the bottom of it, but you got to ask yourself, what new information has Greg Kading come up with in the 6 years since he released his book Murder Rap and then the documentary that he put out after that? What new information has he put out there? What one single piece of information has been new on his own? Now, we're not talking about the videos that they put out to try to put down what we're doing, to try to put down or put us down or try to discount what we're saying. I'm talking about their own investigation. You know, they say, oh, everybody in the car, that, and according to their theory, is dead. But, oh, yeah? Okay. Well, then where is anybody else, any other kind of corroborating information? Where are the interviews with these people? Why hasn't there in 6 years? I mean, Greg Kading made a big spiel with everybody when he was interviewing Tupac's cousin, William Hussein, I think it was, and he went on several different things, and he was so passionate about wanting to find justice for Valletta Wallace, and he was going to go keep doing it, and he wanted to be there for the fans, and da-da-da-da. Well, 6 years later, you look at what's been done, and I haven't seen much at all from him other than repeating the same old stuff over and over again and getting a TV show on USA Network, okay? That's what I see, okay? I see a profit motive. I don't see any new information that they put out. And basically, their whole existence now is just trying to shoot holes in what we're putting out. And it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you know, when two football teams go out there and they play against each other, you know, your goal is to play the better game. You're the better football team. You have a better quarterback. You have better things. And if you play a better game, you will win. You don't win by trying to cripple the other team. That's not the way to win. You win by playing a better game and, you know, and doing it that way. So I feel very strongly about, you know, some of their tactics. Now, I can't talk to you about the video that they just put out because there's some a couple things we're working on right now with that new video that they have where they've blamed Robert Soria and they've had people saying he's paranoid schizophrenic and you know, and then that he's made up the letter, and then they have Danny Malcolm-Patton doing interviews on that tape too. And that's, you know, the first time that they've ever spoken about the matter. Of course, they wouldn't talk to us because, you know, when we put the book out, they didn't want to talk to us. Now, the thing about that is that you got to remember, and people kind of lose their history here. You have to remember that we took the confession letter to the Los Angeles Police Department, Russ Poole and I did. We made no mention of it. We made no mention of names. We didn't say anything publicly about it at all. We took it to the Los Angeles. In fact, we weren't even sure we were going to put names in our book. We were going to use aliases or something. And we took it to the LAPD. And Darren Dupree, who was Greg Kading's partner at the time, was one of the cops that was in the room with the other investigators when we gave our information to them. So now, 2 weeks after Russ Poole and I meet with the LAPD and we give them this confidential information, and we're still, you know, we gave it to the cops. We're going to let them do what they do with it, and maybe they'll be kind enough to let us know if they're going to make any headway with it. And that's kind of how we left it. Suddenly, 2 weeks later, the confession letter gets leaked on the internet by a guy by the name of Anton Beatty, who got it sent to him. And Greg Kading admitted to leaking the letter, and now all of a sudden those names are out. Well, we didn't put those names out, but now, you know, anybody who was mentioned in the letter was part of the story. They're not going to talk to R.J. Bond anymore because now, you know, the jig is up. So I never got an opportunity to talk with Patton, and they're not going to talk to me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, if you and Kading ever had the chance or the opportunity to talk, but you just answered my question. You know, it's just amazing, man, because no one's ever going to be charged for this, it looks like. You know what I'm saying? No one's ever going to be put away, and there's a lot of ironclad evidence out there, you know.
Well,
or at least
I wouldn't be so
pointing
quick.
In the right direction, you know.
Right.
Well,
I wouldn't be
or at
so
least
quick
pointing
to know
in the direction.
Somebody...
Let me rephrase that. At least pointing in the direction that should be looked at.
Right.
And you know, it's crazy to think that nobody is getting charged. Do you think the LAPD has a lot to do with that?
Sure. I mean, you know, what do you say about an organization that takes an internal affairs complaint that I said nothing about to anybody, and I filed an internal affairs complaint years ago in, like, 2013. They leaked that internal affairs complaint, gave it to Greg Kading. He put it out on the Internet. It had my personal home address, my telephone number, everything. And then they turn around later and leak the confession letter. You know, when Russ went to the sheriff's department to go talk to the sheriff's department, I thought he was out of his mind for doing it, because I said, you know, after the ass-kicking that we got at the LAPD, why the hell would you want to go back and try to do this again? You know, definition of insanity is, you know, doing the same thing again and expecting a different result, right? So, yeah, so when we got to, you know, put that letter out, I mean, you got to remember the Danny and Malcolm Patton's name weren't put out by us. They were put out by other people. And Lil Halfdan's name was put out by other people. Now, and at that point, we're okay, cat's out of the bag. Now they put it out there, so we might as well put it in the book. And we did. And I would not tell you that, I mean, again, investigations are a crazy thing. You know, what if there is some information, or what if there is some compelling piece of information that makes a prosecutor's office say, you know what, maybe we should look at this person. Maybe we should file charges. Here's the thing. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but the police can actually close an investigation without indicting somebody, without actually convicting somebody. They can close a murder. And the reason is because, especially right now, and to your point, we live in a society where a person who's accused has the right to face their accusers. That's a constitutional right that we have. And
yeah.
Because witnesses like Gaddafi, Frank Alexander, Michael Moore, these people who've died, you know, those would have been witnesses that the prosecution could have used to indict or to convict somebody if they had somebody in mind that they could use to convict them. And the challenging part about that is that if you got the right guy, let's say tomorrow person X just showed up and he's the guy, and they rush and they throw him on trial, all he would have to say is, I'm not within my constitutional rights here because I can't face my accusers. I can't face Gaddafi. And so for that reason, they'd end up dismissing the trial and it would be over. But the police, under those circumstances, though, the police can close the investigation and they can say, hey, we know who did it. We know why he did it. And by the way, this is very, very telling, because you're talking about murder rap here. This is very telling. The police have the ability to say, we know without a reasonable doubt, we know who did it and why, and we're going to close this investigation without a prosecution because he can't confront his witnesses. Okay?
Yeah.
So the question becomes then, why haven't they? Okay? If that was so sewn up, if the whole Orlando Anderson thing was all sewn up and they had it locked down, and trust me, in the next probably 2 weeks, you're going to see some new information coming out, and I'll get back on the show and talk about it again. And it's not going to be from us. I can promise you that. There's going to be some new information that's going to come out that's going to be very, very challenging to Mr. Kading and the murder rap crew. And it's not coming from us. Okay? It's not coming from our side of the fence. But it casts some doubt.
Not coming from you guys.
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
This is huge. It's huge. I don't mean to cut you off, RJ, but it's not coming from you guys. It's not coming from the murder rap people. Can you tell us who it's coming from?
I can't, not yet, because it's some information that I'm probably not supposed to know of yet, but I do.
It's not a Tupac homicide.
Was that? No. It actually concerns both, because I can tell you this much. It concerns the murder rap investigation, the Biggie Smalls investigation, and it concerns Mr. Kading in that investigation. Now, you know, in our documentary, we went full in deep, balls deep in our indictment of Mr. Kading and his honesty regarding the George Torres Ramos case. I mean, I don't think we left anything on the table there in terms of showing, you know, at the end of the day that, you know, there was some definite malfeasance involved with that case. And so all I can tell you is that, again, like I said, it's not coming from us, and we've got absolutely nothing to do with it. I was surprised to see it. And I was even more surprised to see where it was coming from. But you got to realize, sometimes you want to be the man, you know, sometimes you want to be that guy. There's, you know, trouble can come from more than one side. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to keep our eyes and ears open. But, yeah, that's huge. That's huge. We're going to be looking for that. I'll tell you what, RJ, we're going to go to
a break real quick.
Next 2 weeks. All right, next 2 weeks. We might be having you on again for a third time. So next 2 weeks, people, you heard that. Be looking out for some new information pertaining to this whole, you know, Tupac and Biggie mystery. It's been going on for 20-plus years now. Wow, that's crazy. Hold on, RJ. We'll be right back. Thug Life, how long will they mourn me? Don't go nowhere.
How long will they mourn me? Yeah. It's for my nigga Kato. It's still on, nigga. Leave that Thug Life. Thug Life. How long will they shit for the walk? Yeah, nigga. Tupac and this motherfucker. All my homies drinking liquor. Tears in everybody's eyes. Niggas cried to mourn the homie's homicide. But I can't cry. Instead, I'm just a shoulder. Damn, why they take another soldier? I load my clip, I know my eyes blurry. Don't worry, I'll get them suckers back before you bury. Retaliating full of 187. The real niggas get to go to heaven. How long will they mourn me? Bury me a motherfucking G. Bitch, don't wanna die, bitch, don't fuck with me. It's kinda hard to be optimistic when your homie's lying dead on the pavement, twisted. Y'all don't hear me though. I'm trying hard to make amends, but I'm losing all my motherfucking friends. Damn, they should have shot me when I was born. Now I'm trapped in the motherfucking storm. How long will they mourn me? How long will they mourn me?
After niggas all dead and shit.
How long will they mourn me? Day, homie, you stay down when the other niggas didn't know me. From my heart to the trigger, you my fucking nigga. And things won't be the same without you, nigga. I remember kicking back, you wanted a lack. And going half on a motherfucking honey sack. Smoking blunt after blunt and steady drinking. Hung around so much, you knew what I was thinking. Tell me, Lord, why you take Big KO? So confused, not knowing which way to go. I'm going crazy and running out of fucking time. I can't take it, I'm losing my fucking mind. So day after day, ride after ride, we'll hook up on the other side. Watch over your family and your newborn till we meet again, homie. How long will they mourn me?
A nigga tired of feeling sad. I'm tired of putting it work. I'm tired of crying. Watch my homies leave the earth. I know soon one day I'll be in the dirt. And my people's will be mourning when they get a call from the corner. All niggas can say is that fucked up and get tossed up. Reminiscing how we grew up. Rest in love to my nigga Kato. See you in the crossroads real soon. But now let me pull out some proof. I'll be always thinking of you, homie. Rest in peace.
How long will they mourn me?
Fucking trip, and everybody gotta go. But why the fuck it had to be my nigga Kato? Another nigga fell victim to the chrome. It's enough to make you crazy. It's fucking with my dome. You only live once. Don't deserve a nigga had it bad. This is the day of my motherfucking birth. My niggas say they down and they always be my homie. But when a nigga gone, how long will you mourn me? Yeah.
Mac 10 and this motherfucker. Yeah. How long? Thug Life, boy. Nate, blowing that shit. Nate, dog, do that shit, nigga. Yeah. How long will you mourn me? For my nigga Kato and all his kids. How long will you mourn me?
I wish you would have been another.
man. Apparently, they're still mourning Tupac because a legend like him never dies, truly. I want to ask you this, RJ, as we kick off the second part of this interview. With all the press, you know, a lot of the stuff you were trying to go back and, like we were talking about, do a little damage control from, you know, people getting things wrong and whatnot. What about the upside to that? Is there any upside to what's been going on this past couple weeks? Pre-orders doing good, sales doing good. I mean,
damn. What can I say? When somebody's talking about a movie making these crazy, wild allegations, you know, people want to go see that movie. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's at the end of the day. And I'm not one that subscribes to this, so I don't want anybody trying to take cheap shots at me later on saying, RJ said this. Well, I'm saying this, but I'm attributing to somebody else. They said there's no such thing as bad press, okay? Because
yeah.
at the end of the day, these fools, they're going to find out. If they watch the movie, anybody who will believe that we said Shereen the Night killed Tupac, wow, the movie said that? I better see this movie. So they go down and they get the movie, and they watch it. And that's okay because, you know, we'd make a fortune off of when it's $3.99 to rent a video, you know, by everybody's hands in it, you know, maybe 50 cents get to us, maybe. So, you know, in that aspect, you know, no one's making a killing, but I can tell you that we have had just an incredible amount of people that have been watching that movie. And I can tell you that even the book, Tupac 187, The Red Knight, that the movie was based on April 1st, that was like ranked 600,000th in Amazon. And Amazon's got 8 million books, okay? So 600,000, I guess that's not bad, or 800,000, I guess that's not bad. But
of all those
in the
millions,
course of...
No, not at all.
Dude, but in the course of 2 days, our book shot to number 55,000. From 800,000
wow.
to 55,000 in 2 days. And it stayed that way all week. We were like the number 55,000 of all books. We were number 55,000. And the Amazon rating, that's huge. So, you know, even the book was getting traction from it because it's like a wildfire. Once it started to blaze, it burned hot and people wanted to know what all the controversy was about.
Yeah.
But there is an upside.
Definitely.
There is an upside to it.
Well, with that being said, okay, you got three parts to this this film. Is there going to be a fourth?
I don't think so. We decided to take the whole house down with this one. You know, originally this show was going to be a 10-hour, like Making a Murderer, where it's going to be 10 parts. Each part was going to be an hour. And we've got enough material to do that. Believe it or not, we have enough material to do that. But it just became a matter of, you know, like I said, this is the 10th anniversary of Tupac assassination, conspiracy, and revenge. It came out in October of 2007. So this is the 10th anniversary of that movie coming out. And I felt like, you know, I just felt like I think I've said everything I have to say. Anything else that we're going to say at this point is just going to basically shore up what's in that movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still going to keep digging. We're still going to keep digging, and we're still going to keep going. And so, for example, if somebody says that Robert Soria, who was the delivery man or the mailman with the confession letter of Danny Patton, if they're going to say that Robert Soria is a paranoid schizophrenic and they're going to have people on a video saying that, you know, we already kind of addressed that issue in the movie, but if we find evidence to show that, in fact, he was not a paranoid schizophrenic, that he actually suffered from anxiety and he was not checked into any mental rehabilitation places, that he was actually only in there on an outpatient basis for anxiety issues, that's a big difference. And we're going to do that, but again, at the end of the day, all that's going to do is shore up the confession letter and shore up something that we have in the movie. And that's why the movie's damn near 2.5 hours long, because my distributor wanted it to be 2 hours. They kept bitching at me because I kept dragging out delivering it, and they said, well, why are you taking so long? I said, I can't cut it down. I'm at 2.5 hours, and I can't cut it anymore. If I do that, I'm going to lose important information. And we argued about it for a long time, and finally they said, okay, we get it. So they let me do it. But now I just don't see – I think we're as close as it's going to get, you know, one way or another. We're as close as we're going to get unless somebody else opens up a door, like a prosecutor's office or something else opens the door.
Yeah. Well, let's go back real quick for those that haven't saw the movie or haven't had a chance to you know, catch up with any of your latest interviews here on the show. Okay, the murder rap theory has Orlando Anderson as the shooter, which has been thrown around for a long time. Your film, you have the theory of Little Half Dead.
Well, it's actually the Patton. Little Half Dead was involved, but it was really Danny Patton was the one who gave a confession, and he dictated a letter because he didn't want the police to identify his handwriting. So he dictated the letter to Robert Soria's sister, and it was the Danny Patton confession letter. He indicted Little Half Dead in the letter, but that was his thing.
Okay, now when you look at the Orlando Anderson theory, you know, from your side, from the investigative work that you've done, if you can you dismantle that theory right now for our listeners?
Well, we do a pretty good job of doing that in the movie. I mean, I could give you just basically the nuts and bolts of it is that, you know, ultimately in our theory and the way that we look at the entire homicide and shooting in Vegas in 1996, there's a lot of information, a lot of evidence that would indicate that Suge Knight was actually the target of that shooting, and it wasn't necessarily Tupac. He was collateral damage. According to the letter, Little Half Dead wanted to take him out, but that wasn't the big plan. The big plan for the night was let's get rid of Suge Knight. And from the minute that that happened and the minute that that murder went sideways, the attempted murder happened and it went sideways, and people say, well, Suge Knight's such a big guy. I mean, if they were really trying to kill him, how come they missed him so many times? And the truth of the matter is that they were just amateurs, and there's even more detail we could go into than that, but ultimately it was just kind of amateur hour. And by the way, he did get hit. He got hit either by flying glass. He claims to have a bullet in his head. I haven't seen any proof of that, but he and his attorneys claim that he does and claim that they couldn't surgically remove it, a shrapnel or something like that. So at the end of the day, I mean, he did get hit. He got hit by something, so it's not like they missed.
Even if somebody got shot right next to him like that, like it was a logical chance that he can get hit too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and back when we did the first assassination movie and we kind of drew a dotted line to Suge, we took a lot of heat for that because even though we didn't come out and say that he did it, most people took it away that that's what we thought, and the truth was at that time that was what I thought. And yet we could never get around it. You got to be honest with yourself when you're doing an investigation, and any good cop will tell you it's okay to be wrong. It's the wrong kind of cop that tells you that you can't be wrong about something. You can be wrong.
Yeah.
Russ Poole was willing to go to Suge Knight and apologize for what he believed to have been Suge Knight's role in it. And, of course, I came to that same conclusion that, you know, in the first one, he was sitting in the car with him. I mean, how did you get around that at the end of the day? How do you get past that?
Exactly.
You just can't.
So who would be willing to damn near get shot to kill somebody else? You know what I'm saying? Like, it just don't make no fucking sense, period.
No. Right. So when you look at that, and that, which is kind of the immovable rock in the middle of the river that we had to navigate around, but it's okay because when you're investigating a crime, any crime at all, it's okay to reel it back a little bit, and that's what you do. You put it on rewind. You go back and you rewind it to where it's just before that, and then you say, okay, what am I missing here? And it took an interview with Brett Becker of the Vegas Police Department that I did 10 years earlier to kind of unlock that, because you got to realize 10 years ago, I was just getting started in the whole thing. I was new to the facts involving the shooting. Frank had to kind of keep me up on everything. And 10 years later, you can understand a lot more, you know, kind of reading between the lines or subtext, or when somebody's saying something, but they're not really saying something. You know, you may do an interview 10 years ago if you don't understand the whole story or the context.
Mm-hmm.
You may miss something that somebody's throwing you, like they're totally throwing you a bone, and it just goes right over your head, gone, just like
right. That. And then sometimes people have like suppressed memories too, like things that you asked them about 10 years ago. It might have came back to them when you ask them years later. That don't mean they lying or they refuting what they were saying earlier, but like. Somebody asks you something, you don't remember the story the right way because they asked you about it, like, on the spot or something. But then, like, months later, you like, man, I forgot to tell them about this, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm pretty sure y'all came across people like that, too.
Well, or it wasn't important at the time. You know, it wasn't, you know, there's many, many cases that have turned on somebody that said, you know, I didn't think it was important at the time. I mean, we have a witness. It's called On Deep Background because we can't give her name out, but I can tell you she is very reputable. She's a very reputable person, and she saw David Mack and Rafael Perez at the Peterson Auto Museum the day before the event, checking the place out, looking around, checking the place out, and she saw them. And now, unfortunately, and she was actually, I can tell you this much, she was working the event. So, in other words, she was a member of a company who was actually providing services for the event. Not like catering services, like informational services, okay?
Right,
like
I understand what you said. Yeah.
So you're like an organizer. And she saw
she wasn't just a fucking groupie standing around looking.
Exactly.
Like she was there, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And she saw them, and she called her dad, who was an attorney. And she said, Dad, I saw these guys. What do I do? He said, stay the hell out of it. Okay. And you know, and I can't probably tell you dozens of people have had that same advice. It's bad for an investigation, but it's practical in the sense of look who you're dealing with, you know, at the end of the day. So, but when we talked, she said the same thing. It didn't seem important at the time. She really didn't know who these dudes were. Until later when she saw their picture and David Mack with the robbery and all that, and then Rafael Perez getting accused of this with the Russell Poole theory. And later on, she realized, I saw those guys were there. I saw them the day before. I saw them. So, you know, that's how a case turns. It turns on things happening like that. And, again, that's why I keep going back, and I know I sound like I'm throwing rocks, and I don't mean to be. But, you know, you got to ask yourself, how serious are you about an investigation when you haven't turned over any new rocks in 6 years? Okay? Because there will be people, and I'm not talking about the streets. You know, everybody talks about the streets. You know, the streets say this and the streets say that. Let's be a little more specific, okay? Let's try to get to people, not the streets. I mean, let's get to people that are reputable, people that, you know, don't carry a rap sheet 10 miles long. And if they do, let's find out if they're telling the truth anyway. I'm not saying just because a person's got a record that they're not credible. They could be credible. And, you know, I don't care if you're...
the streets ain't going to do nothing but feed you bullshit.
Yeah. So, you know, I know more people that are claimed to be honorable people, ministers and stuff like that, that lie more than, you know, priests, that lie more than most, you know, convicts do. So, you know, it's all relative.
Yeah, most definitely.
Think this case will ever be solved, though? Do you think it would ever be some evidence that somebody could provide? Or I'm thinking basically it had to be whoever did the shooting would have to actually come up and say, I did the shooting, and here go the gun for it. Or do you actually think these cases can ever be solved?
Well, Brett Becker said it the best. He said even if that was the case and somebody came up and had the murder weapon in their hand and it was still smoking and they put it on the counter, and they said, I killed Tupac, and here's the gun, and it's still smoking. And by the way, I went down and I actually got the ballistics report run myself just to prove to you that this is the gun that killed him, and put that on the desk and say, here, arrest me right now. I want to confess. He probably still wouldn't get a fair trial for all those reasons I talked about before, facing your accusers and things like that, you know. Even when somebody confesses to something, they say, yeah, I did it. You still have to put them through that trial, and the burden is still on the state to prove, even if the guy says he did it, to prove beyond that he did it. Because, you know, unfortunately, people lie about that kind of stuff all the time. You know, people...
Right, I was about to say...
Especially for high-profile
cases. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
But I still hold out hope, because I don't believe personally that all the people that were in the car that shot at Tupac and Suge are dead. And if they are alive, and if they were part of it, and if there's any reason to believe that they might have been involved, okay, then I do have hope. Mm-hmm. I have hope that something may come of it. Will we get an indictment? Probably not. But I think a lot of people would be happy just having the closure to get the official word to say, you know what, yeah, I mean, these people were involved. These people had something to do with it. And maybe this guy was the shooter or that guy was the shooter. And we just unfortunately won't get a fair trial for the guy, but we're going to close this,
right.
You know, the best we could do. And I've never heard that
right.
yet. I haven't heard the cops say this is the best we could do. In fact, I heard Greg Kading's boss tell LA Weekly, and you guys have to look up the article, but he said, hey, we tried and tried to run everything to its logical conclusion, but we could never get anything to back it up. And that was it. So he basically admitted it was a failure. He's like, we just gave up. You know, so I haven't heard the cops say that yet. I haven't heard them say, we solved it. Greg Kading's boss
right.
didn't say that. He didn't say that we solved it. He said we had some leads and we were hoping for other things that would help reinforce those leads, but that never happened.
Right.
Right.
I'm about to say, you gotta make that shit stick. That shit don't stick. And especially now, it's 20 years later, you got so many theories and so many ideas on what could have possibly happened. If people were saying Suge shot him, people were saying this. You know, I hadn't even heard the little half-dead theory until, you know, Prez hyped me to that shit. And I'm like, damn. Like, a lot of the theories, even if they all different theories, a lot of them make perfect sense, though. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The evidence will lead you to the truth. The evidence always leads you. Because I always thought it was Orlando Anderson, me, myself. Because I'm looking at it like, okay, They in the casino, you stomp some motherfuckers out, they big brawl, and then, you know, usually what happened is, okay, when we get outside, we're going to tighten their ass up. It's easy
right.
to believe that. Like, okay, they was rolling, okay, we see them, there they go, roll up on them real quick, boom, 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 especially for some L.A. guys, you know what I'm saying? That's the type of shit
yep.
that they do out there. You know what I'm saying?
Now,
so I always thought that.
Mm-hmm.
Me, myself.
But you got it. But if you take Tupac out of the car for a minute, who do you have in the car? You got
exactly.
The most powerful man
exactly.
in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care, and I'm sorry, but I'll say this. I said in a couple interviews now, and I don't care. I don't care how mad you are, how pissed you are that you want to go out and get some skin because of what you were embarrassed or you got humiliated or it's your honor or you
no,
got
I was
five
just,
guys.
Not, yeah, not even necessarily getting embarrassed. Like, they just put hands on me. I got to do something back to them, man.
Got
to
do something back, right.
You just
stomp
me out.
Okay.
You
right.
know what I'm saying?
But – yeah, but does your plan also including killing the most powerful man in the music industry at that time? Because if they're together and you see they're together, you have every reason in the world to not shoot. Okay?
Exactly.
And,
yeah, but
Suge
was doing
so,
but Suge was doing some stomping too though. Like, he was kicking and doing all that shit in the videos too, right? What wasn't Suge jumping on?
Well, they
you know what I'm saying?
Because
yeah. see, this is the thing. When you're looking at it from a street level, like, street dudes
right.
don't give a fuck that Tupac was the biggest rap dude. Because they looking at
no,
it like, I got a homeboy that can rap just like you. You just on before we on. That's how street dudes
right.
look at it. That's why
but
I always thought that maybe it could have been those guys.
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't disagree with you, except for the one thing that they would consider, though, would be a Suge Knight. Okay?
Yeah.
You got
because he was a boss.
Yeah, he was a boss, and he had both Bloods and Crips working for him at Death Row Records, you know, the whole
yeah.
Dogtown set.
Yeah.
You know, he had
yep.
ties in deep, and if you believe anything about the money laundering or anything about the drugs walking their way out of the evidence locker and the PCP walking its way out of the evidence locker and the guns walking their way out of the
right.
evidence locker, you know, there was no difference between Death Row and the city of Compton. So Suge Knight was keeping a lot of people fed and keeping a lot of people raking in some serious cash. So when you want to get mad and you think about your future and what that looks like, you can roll up on Tupac all day long, but do you really – I mean, you better kill Suge Knight. If you're going to take that shot,
right.
you better be set that you're going to kill
yeah,
him.
Yeah, exactly. Because
and finish
yeah, you got to have
–
because, like, when you connected in the streets like that, you can't just keep – you just get, it's almost like some mafia shit. You can't just off a boss like that and not expect some repercussions, especially when they got more money than what you got. Did you ever run into Suge when y'all was making any of these films throughout the year?
Yeah, you did with Frank Alexander. I remember you telling us about that last time.
I think I told you that story about that was a scene. Frank was gonna kill Suge. You know, I'm glad he didn't, because he would have died knowing that he didn't do the right thing. So I'm glad that he didn't.
Tell us about that again, RJ, real quick, if you don't care. Frank Alexander was about to kill Suge. I mean, how close was it?
It was maybe 12 feet. We were in Las Vegas. It was a 2009, and we were at the Las Vegas clothing show. It's like a design show called the Magic Show. It's a big fashion show there. And Frank was doing bodyguard protective services for one of a clothing vendor. He did T-shirts and stuff, and he had a booth there at the show on the main floor where you go out and you look at all the different exhibitors. And he was providing security for that dude. And he had an ankle holster that had a Smith & Wesson 38 snub nose in it. And then he had his Beretta tucked on the side, which had 13. And he was proud to carry them around, proud to wear them. We got word, as we were standing there, Frank's face just turned all kinds. Somebody whispered something in Frank's ear, kind of like Tupac, whispered in his ear. And Frank's face got just stone cold. And I've been friends with Frank going on, almost 10 years at that point. No, it's 13 years at that point.
You know him real fairly well at this point.
I mean, I'd never seen that look on his face before. And I said, "What's wrong?" And he looks at me and says, "Shug down the next aisle," and he's fixing to walk this way around. And somebody just came up and told me that. And I said, "Wow, really?" And he said, "That nigga comes up anywhere around here, I'm going to shoot him square between the eyes. I will kill him."
Damn.
And I said, the first thing I think, I'm like, I get it, you know. And he goes, "No, you don't understand. He looks sideways at me for any reason. I will kill him today. I am ready to die myself. I am prepared for this, and I have no problem with it."
Mm.
And the conviction that he said that with, man, it made a hole in my stomach. And of course, you know, me, because that the nature of our relationship, I was trying to make light of it, so I told him, I said, "Well, if you're going to do that, let me go get my video camera, okay?"
Yeah.
That would make a great, I said,
but
that would make
about,
a great yeah, ending.
Man, you had to have been, you had to have been.
I was about
like
to say, you're trying to walk
mind.
Him off the ledge.
It's going
to
be a homicide right now.
Well, that was it, but I believed, and what ended up happening was Suge, instead of turning in to go down our lane, he turned the other way and went down the other lane. And I'm not sure if that was choice or just good fortune, but that was a about as near miss as I want to get in terms of all shit breaking loose in Vegas again.
I guarantee you, if he went the other way after they say he was coming this way, you know what I'm saying? He knew what the business was. Like, when you know you on some fuck shit, you ain't finna go around a real dude. You know what I'm saying?
I believe that. I believe that somebody may have let him know that Frank was over there and he was strapped.
Yeah, somebody let him know. Or he seen him. Or he could have seen him. He could have looked over and, "Damn, that motherfucker over there. I ain't fucking with him today.
Yeah.
I'm not fucking with that dude."
Yeah, and you know what? That's just picking your battles, man. I mean, you're not a coward if you pick your battles. I mean, you know, if you just don't want to get into some shit, you're there to have a good time, and you just don't feel like it. I mean, at the time, I think Suge was even on another case in Vegas right then. He was already, you know, kind of on probation for that. Last thing he wanted to do, go back to jail for any period of time. So, you know, just to stay away.
Or get his fucking noodles blew out his head by Frank Alexander. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
it would have been
a different TMZ story.
It would have been an ending to our series, that's for sure. It would have been the end of the show.
Well, hey, RJ, it's been a hell of an interview. Before you go, I want to bring on, I see we got a caller. I'm going to bring on, this is the homie Exit Only, see if he has a question for you out of Jackson, Mississippi. What's up, Exit?
What's going on with your family? What's up with your Mac, Jay, Fred?
What's good with
Jay?
It?
Salute.
What's good with it?
Oh, man, it's good. It's good. Just sitting back here listening to the conversation, man, enjoying the interview. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of like you, Mac J. I just really would like to know exactly what happened. But I don't know if it'll ever fully be revealed. But I have heard a whole lot of people sitting there saying it was a hit on Suge, and Suge's wife had something to do with it.
Yeah, you know. Well, you, if you look at the film too, actually, you know, Reggie was telling people to leave their guns behind. You know what I'm saying? And that's, we've known about that for a while, but the way you put it together with all the other things, it makes you look a little bit deeper into it. You know what I'm saying? And, I recommend, man, everybody checks out this film, Tupac Assassination, Battle for Compton, because it you know, you call it Battle for Compton because it's really much bigger than, you know, Pac, Suge, and Biggie. There's so many other key factors involved here. I mean, you got police departments. You got, you know, with that being said, are you in fear for your life, you know, from you know, because, you know, police departments, they're not shy about going after somebody. Have you ever been harassed? Or?
Yeah, I they shot a warning. They shot a warning shot across my bow middle of last week out of the blue. And it was under a so-called friendly pretense, but the timing of it was so bizarre and so one-off. And when I told the guy, I was talking to the guy, I told him that I couldn't talk right at the moment, but you know, he could call me back, and he never called back. And like I said, there was a shot fired across my bow, you know. And then of course, we were talking about the press earlier when we first started this interview. We were talking about the press, and we were talking about how they get things tied up. Well, the next thing you know, they got an article coming out saying that R.J. Bond is saying the LAPD is covering up things and this, that, and the other. And even though that's true, I mean, I'll own it. It's in the movie. I mean, there's no question about it. When the newspaper headlines start glaring that, start broadcasting that point out, there's a point where you start to get a little bit of shrinkage going on, if you know what I'm saying. You know, you start to say, well, okay, you know, I guess this is going to go on blast now. But, you know, like I said, I own it. You know, that's really at the end of the day. You know, if you're not, listen, you can't be afraid to put it out there. I mean, if you, you know, that's the problem with these investigations. I think the people, you know, need to have the courage of their convictions and come out and talk about what needs to be talked about. And then the other thing is, you know, I've heard it said so many times that, oh, this is a grand conspiracy. Now look at, he's drugged the whole LAPD into it. Now he's drugged the sheriff's department in. Now he's drugged the Compton police into it. You know, when does this all stop? You know, this is like, who's next? You know, whoop-de-whoop, is the CIA next? You know, how long are you before you're John Potash? You know, where do you go? And I can tell you this, guys, and I want the listeners to hear this. This is not a grand conspiracy, okay? This is, there are a lot of good cops out there, and this is not a bag on the cops thing, or I hate cops. I come from a family of cops, okay? But at the end of the day, what it is a few people who knew how to game the system. They knew how the system worked, and there was maybe a dozen or so people, you know, over the course of the whole, you know, years, as it were, that knew how to game the system, and they manipulated the system to their advantage. That's all. Nothing, that's not a grand conspiracy, you know. That's like Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 12. You pick, okay? But it's not a grand conspiracy.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I'll tell you what, hell of a flick. One more thing I have for you, RJ. What do you want people to take away from this this film after they're done watching it? What's the one thing you want them to be like, you know?
That's the best question I've been asked. That's the best question I've been asked all day, brother. The one thing I want people to take away from Battle of Compton, no problem, is this. As long as the official narrative is out there, which we call noise, it's like white noise, the Orlando Anderson theory and all that, as long as that is being constantly thrown in your face through media, propaganda, you know, City of Los Angeles got a lot of money to put that out there because it deflects, you know, people in the drug business got a lot of money. It deflects people that have agendas and want to be celebrities, want to have their own TV show. You know, they have an agenda, so they put it out there like that. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what theory you have. And, you know, we talked a minute ago about all these different theories. And we talked about how, you know, it could be one, it could be another. But I guarantee you one thing. As long as that noise continues about the Orlando Anderson story and all that, until that noise dies down and you put it over on the side and you say, okay, let's take a look at some other things. I don't care how crazy they are. Maybe it's Oprah. I don't know. But let's go batshit crazy for a little bit and let's look at this over here. That's never going to happen so long as you have the noise turned up to 11 with the what we call the official narrative. And I want people that watch Battle of Compton to understand that. And the call to action in my world is forget the talk, show the doc. Okay? Show me the documents. Show me the evidence. Show me where it says Orlando Anderson. I'm going to tell you something you're going to learn real soon. You're going to learn a whole new take on that Lakewood Mall story. Okay? You're going to hear something new about that in the next 2 weeks. Okay? And that ain't even what I was talking about the murder rap stuff. That's something else you're going to learn in the next 2 weeks. There's a whole different thing you're going to learn about that Lakewood Mall situation, that if it even existed in the first place. We don't think it did. But even if it did, you're going to learn somebody's going to come up and they're going to say something completely different about that. So just keep that in mind.
It never ends, RZ. It never ends. We'll be looking forward to all this stuff the next 2 weeks, and we'll be looking forward to catching up with you again. Thanks for coming by again. I appreciate you. Again, if people want to get the film, I imagine it's everywhere. Give them your website and all your social media so they can keep up with you.
Okay, yeah. You know what? It's the website is t3battleforcompton.com. The best place to get us is on Facebook, Tupac Assassination, Battle for Compton. Facebook, we're all over the place there. Movies on I lied the last time I came on. I got to confess to you guys, I lied. I said it was on iTunes. I thought it was on iTunes, but they made a liar out of me. It will be on iTunes starting next week because they screwed something up with the technical side of it. So it will be on iTunes. It's already on Amazon. And by the way, if you got Amazon Prime, you can see it for free. You can see it for free. I don't know much of a better deal than that. You know, you go try a movie out. What do you got to lose? You can see it for free. So it's on Amazon. I mean, it's everywhere right now. FYE is actually selling it. A lot of people have been asking me about that, about, you know, is there any retailer selling it? I know for a fact FYE is selling it. We just had somebody from Florida send us a picture that he took with his DVD in his hand. He was so happy. So that's kind of cool, you know. But not as cool as being on a Murder Master Music Show. So, you know, just put it out there.
Well, we appreciate you, man. You're welcome anytime.
All right.
With that being said, this is Tupac. Holler at me.
Niggas out there jealous. We be
smelling
with their throat. They try to play a hate, but they can't fade us though. We be mobbing through the neighborhood, yeah, with that funk sound. We be throwing down.
This goes out to you, player. Can't let the evil of the money trap me. So when you see me, nigga, you better holler at me. Gotta be careful. Can't let the evil of the money trap me. So when you see me, nigga, you better holler at me. Gotta be careful. Can't let the evil of the money trap me. So when you see me, nigga, you better holler at me. Are you confused? You wonder how it feels to walk a mile inside the shoes of a nigga who don't have a thing to lose. I mean, you knew was on me. No one before me, it was all a scheme. I put some cash in your pocket, made you a man again. And now you let the fear put your ass in a place complicated to escape. It's a fool's fate. Without your word, you a shell of a man. I lost respect for you, nigga. We can never be friends. I know I'm running through your head now. What could you do if it was up to you? I'd be dead now. I let the world know, nigga, you a coward. You can never be live until you die. See the motherfucking bitch in your eyes. Type of nigga, let the evil of the money trap me. When you see me, nigga, you better holler at me. Holler at me. I hit the studio, it's time to blow the block up. No hesitation, this information got you contemplating. Or I'm breaking elimination with the conversation. Break them and let them see the face of a middle patient and celebration. I'm a criminal elevation, more participation. I want members to call the 50 states. We keep the nation anticipating until we break. Will I be great? Is it my fate to live a life of luxury? So niggas on my day, so it's hell of a year. So be prepared, cause only the strong survive. Life isn't fair. Probably never knew the way it feels to die. So you think of fuck with me, I get that ass to try. Nigga, holla. Can't kill it, the evil of the money trap. So when you see me, nigga, you better holla at me.
You better be where you stay. We better not find where you stay.
And now I got it, can't kill it, the evil of the money trap. So when you see me, nigga, you better holla at me. On my brain, why she blame me? Secrets in the dark, only her and I know. Now I'm sitting in the safe man, doing time slow. Cause she made a bad decision that got me living just like an animal. I'm caged up in state prison. My niggas is it, cause hell has no fury like a woman scorn. A cemetery full of motherfuckers not knowing. Picture my prophecy, I got some attacking me on top of me. I'm running from the cops, but never let them stop me, cause I'm a soldier. Ever since I was a little nigga, having fantasies of one day being older. Niggas is paranoid, trust.
Blind stares of a million pairs of eyes, looking hard but won't realize that they will never see the pea. Coked up and weeded, open fire, now them niggas bleeding. See
stay off his dick.
Come on, say I ain't got time. way before all the trapping. I'm a fucking pop from the teeth in the hood. Put it work, this was dirt, never snitch, never would. Pulling fat tag bars with my nigga B. Going up, tab coming back, sipping in the seat. 17 years old and I felt like a darn ass bitch. And I had my pick up any fine bitch. And my family was known to be crazy. Like me, all representing, no matter who sets it on. Street power, why you niggas split, bitch, you dumb shit. I'll be by my motherfucking grip, nothing else. Cause between me and mine, yes, remember that. Damn, it's a shame. But still, I'm in the game. Trying to get street bang.
I know they wish they never had me. In and out of jail by 12, selling out of school. Cause I was living by the street rules, hanging with hogs, dropping dogs in the little boat. I was getting my respect, but I was still broke. To the game and expanded to the cocaine. Went from double up to swinging them whole things. Touching through my mail, name ringing like a bell. And even with no proof, they gonna put me in jail. If I say so, then I'm out of control. Motherfuckers got to, but I still roll. Show my dad, show my cousin. They wouldn't know a motherfucker if he didn't have shit. So while I'm balling, they kicking up dust. Keep some skull crush. Bitch made niggas know not to fuck with us. Cause I'm living on the edge of blasting lead. Voted by the fans, they got to take it in. So fucking try to fuck it in the inner city. In the land of no pity. I made it by the street.
Run quick, see what do we have here now? You wanna ride it?
street, back with promise makers. Never realized the precious time that bitch niggas is wasting. Institutionalized, I live my life a product made to crumble. But too hard and for a smile, we're too crazy to be humble. We ballin', catch me Papa P, cause I'm callin'. In the liquor store, that's the Hennessy I hear callin'. Can I get some more? Hell, till I reach hell, I ain't scared. Mama check it in my bedroom, I ain't there. I got a head with no screws in it. What can I do? One life to live, but I got nothing to lose, just me and you. On a one-way trip to prison, selling drugs, we all wrapped up in this living. Like the studs to my homeboys and Clinton Max, doing they bid. Raise hell to this real shit, and feel this. When they turn out the lights, I'll be there in the dark. Love of eternal through my heart. Now Hail Mary, nigga, come with me. Hail Mary, nigga, run quick, see. What do we have here now? Do you want to ride or die? La da 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 da. Come with me. Hail Mary, nigga, run quick, see. What do we have here now? Do you want to ride or die? La da 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 da.
They got an APB out on my thug family. Since outlaws run these streets like these scandalous. Coming with slugs.
Peep the whole scene and whatever's going on around me. Brain kinda cloudy, smoked out, feeling rowdy, ready to wet the party up. And whoever in that motherfucker, nasty new street slugger. My heat, deep suckers on the regular, mashing in a stolen black act. Integra, cock back, dicky seconds to the draw. That's when I'm dead in your feet first. You got a nice gap, but my heat's worse. From a thug to preaching church, I gave you love, now you eating dirt, needing work. And I ain't the nigga to put you on, cause word is born. When I was broke, I had to hustle till dawn. That's when the sun came up. It's only one way up, hold your head, stay up. So all my niggas get your pay and wait up.
If it's on, then it's on. We rake, we break, outlaw on the paper chase. Can you relate to the shit I don't got? Be the shit I gotta take. Dealing with fate, hoping God don't blow the gate. If it's on, then it's on. We rake, we break, outlaws on the paper chase. Can you relate to the shit I don't got? Be the shit I gotta take. Dealing with fate, hoping God don't blow the gate.
Traveling on this weary road, sometimes life can be an empty load, but we ride, riding like a bullet. Hail Mary,
Hail Mary,
we won't worry, everything will hurry. We'll bring like a bird in the tree. We won't worry, everything will curry. Yes, we breathe like a bird in the tree. We're running from the penitentiary. This is the time for relief. Hail Mary, Hail Mary.